A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He wants to talk about the ATM, that machine we all use and none of us think about. He's pointing at the deposit mechanism specifically. The fact that you can shove a stack of mixed crumbled banknotes into a slot and the thing counts them, validates them, and credits your account without blinking. His question is, when was this technology invented, and how is its adherence to tight quality control parameters continuously verified? Which is really two questions, the origin story and the ongoing miracle of keeping these things precise.
The origin story is genuinely strange. The first ATM was installed by Barclays in Enfield, North London, in June of 1967. The inventor was a Scotsman named John Shepherd Barron, and the story goes he was in the bath when the idea hit him. He wanted a machine that would dispense cash the way a chocolate vending machine dispenses chocolate bars. But here's the part that always gets me. His machine didn't use plastic cards or pins. It used paper checks impregnated with radioactive carbon-14. The machine detected the carbon-14 signature to authenticate the check, then dispensed a fixed amount, 10 pounds I think it was. You inserted the check, the machine read the radiation signature, matched it against a stored template, and released the cash. No network connection, no account verification in real time. The security model was basically, if you possess a piece of paper with the right radioactive isotope, you deserve 10 pounds.
The first ATM was a Geiger counter with a cash drawer.
That's exactly what it was. And the pin hadn't been invented yet. Shepherd Barron originally wanted a 6-digit code, but his wife told him she could only remember 4 digits, so 4 digits it became. The entire global pin infrastructure is built on the memory limitations of one man's wife in 1965.
That's the most British engineering origin story I've ever heard. Bath, chocolate machine, wife sets the spec.
What Daniel's really asking about isn't the 1967 version. It's the modern deposit-taking ATM, which is a fundamentally different beast. The cash-dispensing-only ATM is relatively simple mechanically. The deposit ATM, the one that takes your stack of mixed notes and counts them automatically, that didn't become widespread until the 1990s. And under the hood, it's essentially a robotic vault with more sensors than some laboratory instruments.
Let's get under that hood. What's actually in there?
At the core, you've got 4 major subsystems. There's the safe, a steel vault that holds the cash cassettes typically rated to resist physical attack for a specified time. There's the dispenser mechanism, which pulls notes from those cassettes and presents them to the user. There's the deposit acceptor, which is the reverse. It takes notes from the user, validates them, and sorts them into the appropriate cassettes. And then there's the computer and network interface that ties it all together and talks to the bank's back end. All of this fits in a footprint smaller than a refrigerator.
The hard part is that the thing it's handling, paper money, is terrible from an engineering standpoint.
Banknotes are made of cotton linen blend or polymer. They arrive crumpled, torn, taped, folded, damp, or just worn smooth after years of circulation. They vary in size by denomination. In most currencies, different denominations have different dimensions. They have different colors, different magnetic signatures depending on the ink composition, different optical properties in infrared versus visible light. And the machine has to handle all of this at speed, with an error rate that would be considered absurdly low in almost any other consumer device.
Walk me through what happens when I shove a stack of notes into the deposit slot.
The first thing that happens is the pick mechanism. This is a rubber roller, or more commonly, a set of rollers, that presses against the top note in the stack and uses friction to separate it from the rest. The roller rotates, the top note moves forward, and the notes beneath it are held back by a combination of air pressure and a stationary gate. The engineering challenge here is that the coefficient of friction of that rubber roller has to be almost perfectly consistent across millions of cycles and across a wide range of temperature and humidity. Too much friction and you'll pick multiple notes at once. Too little and you won't pick anything.
Rubber changes with temperature.
At low temperatures, rubber hardens and loses grip. At high temperatures, it softens and can leave residue on the notes. Manufacturers like Diebold Nixdorf and NCR, those are the two largest ATM manufacturers globally. They test these pick rollers in environmental chambers from minus 20 Celsius to plus 60 Celsius. They run them through millions of cycles and measure the first pick success rate at each temperature point. The target is usually above 99.5%, meaning the roller successfully picks exactly one note on the first attempt at least 995 times out of 1,000.
That's just the first step.
Just the first step. Once the note is picked, it enters the transport path, a series of belts and rollers that move it through the machine at something like 400 to 600 millimeters per second. As it travels, it passes through a gauntlet of sensors. The optical sensor array looks at the note under visible light and infrared light. Different denominations have different patterns in infrared. Some inks reflect IR, some absorb it, and the machine compares what it sees against stored templates for each denomination.
It's not just looking at the picture, it's looking at the ink chemistry.
Then there's the magnetic sensor. Most currencies use magnetic ink for at least some elements of the banknote design. The US dollar uses magnetic ink in the portrait and the treasury seal, for example. The ATM's magnetic head reads the magnetic signature as the note passes, and that signature is denomination specific. A $20 bill has a different magnetic map than a 50.
Then there's the ultrasonic sensor, which I'd never heard of before researching this.
This is the one that really gets me. The ultrasonic sensor fires high-frequency sound waves through the note as it passes. Clean paper transmits sound differently than paper with tape on it, or two notes stuck together, or a note that's been partially torn and repaired. The acoustic signature of a single note is distinctive. If two notes are stuck together, even perfectly aligned, the thickness doubles and the sound transmission changes. The machine catches it in milliseconds.
You've got optical, magnetic, and acoustic sensors all reading the same note simultaneously, each measuring something the others can't.
It's a textbook case of sensor fusion, using redundant orthogonal measurements to achieve high reliability from imperfect individual sensors. Any single sensor can be fooled. A counterfeiter might get the optical pattern right but miss the magnetic ink. Or they might get the magnetic ink right but use paper with the wrong acoustic properties. But getting all three right simultaneously on a note that's also the correct physical dimensions is extraordinarily difficult. And that's before we even get to the dimensional check. The machine is measuring the length and width of each note as it passes, comparing against the expected dimensions for each denomination.
All of this happens in milliseconds per note.
A typical deposit, ATM processes something like 8 to 10 notes per second. Each note gets the full sensor treatment, the machine identifies the denomination, checks for counterfeits, checks for damage, and either routes it to the appropriate storage cassette or sends it to the reject bin. If you deposit a mix of 20s and 50s, the machine sorts them automatically. It's not just counting, it's sorting by denomination in real time.
What happens when a note fails validation?
It goes to the reject bin, and the machine either returns it immediately or holds it and returns all rejects at the end of the deposit. And this is one of the misconceptions Daniel's question points toward. Users often think a rejected note means the machine is broken. It's the opposite. The machine is designed to reject any note it cannot validate with high confidence. The risk model is asymmetrical. Accepting a counterfeit or misreading a denomination is far worse than rejecting a legitimate note, so the system errs on the side of rejection.
Which is why sometimes you feed the same note three times and it keeps spitting it back, and then the fourth time it accepts it. The note is right on the boundary of the confidence threshold.
Slight variations in how the note enters the sensor path. A tiny difference in angle or alignment can push the confidence score above or below the threshold. It's not random, but it looks random to the user.
That's the design. But Daniel's second question is about how this precision is maintained over time. Because designing a machine that works perfectly in the lab is one thing. Designing one that still works perfectly after 5 years in a grocery store vestibule in Minnesota in January is something else entirely.
This is where the quality control story gets interesting, because it's not just about manufacturing tolerances, though those are tight. The real system is continuous monitoring. Every modern ATM runs self-diagnostics on every single transaction. It logs the number of pick attempts per note dispensed, so if the machine had to try twice to pick a note from a cassette, that's logged. It logs the sensor readings for every note that passes through, the optical signal strength, the magnetic signal strength, the ultrasonic transmission values. It logs any error codes, any partial dispenses, any notes that went to the reject bin. All of this data is transmitted to a central monitoring system, typically operated by the bank or by a managed services provider.
The machine is constantly reporting on its own health.
And the monitoring system is looking for trends. If a particular machine's first pick success rate drops from 99.7% to 99.2%, that's still well within functional range. The user probably won't notice anything wrong. But the system flags it. That decline means the pick roller is wearing, or there's dust accumulation on the sensors, or the cassette spring tension is drifting. A service call gets scheduled before the machine actually fails.
It's predictive maintenance, essentially. The machine is telling you it's going to break before it breaks.
And the thresholds are aggressive. Most operators set the trigger at around 99.5% first pick success. Below that, a technician gets dispatched. The industry benchmark for dispensing errors, that's dispensing the wrong number of notes or the wrong denomination, is less than one error per 100,000 transactions. For deposit validation, the target is even tighter because the machine is accepting liability. If it says you deposited $200 and you actually deposited $220, the bank eats that loss.
What does the actual field performance look like against those benchmarks?
It varies by fleet and by region, but the major manufacturers claim their machines meet or exceed those targets in the field. NCR published data a few years back showing their latest generation machines achieving something like 0.7 dispensing errors per 100,000 transactions in controlled field trials. Real-world numbers are probably a bit higher, but still well within the 1 per 100,000 target.
What does the technician actually do when they show up?
This is where the cash and transit companies come in. The same companies that deliver cash to the machines also handle routine maintenance. The technician will run a diagnostic sequence, clean the sensors with approved solvents, dust on an optical sensor can degrade the signal enough to increase reject rates, and check the pick rollers for wear. They carry calibration cards, which are essentially test notes with known optical, magnetic, and ultrasonic signatures. They feed these through the machine and verify that the sensor readings match the expected values. If a sensor has drifted, they recalibrate it.
Sometimes the problem isn't the machine at all. It's the notes.
Banknotes from different printers or different vintages can have slightly different properties. A batch of notes from a particular currency printer might use a slightly different ink formulation that has unusual magnetic characteristics. The central monitoring systems can detect this. If reject rates spike across multiple machines in a region, and the common factor is notes from a specific series or printer, the bank can investigate. There was a case in 2019 where a batch of faulty pick rollers caused a spike in dispense errors across a European bank's entire ATM fleet. The issue was eventually traced to a change in the rubber compound formulation at the supplier. The new compound was within spec on paper, but it aged differently in the field, hardening faster than expected in low humidity environments.
The quality control is a feedback loop that runs from the supplier's rubber formulation all the way to the individual transaction log.
That's the insight I think Daniel is driving at. The ATM isn't just a well-designed machine, it's a system. The machine itself, the monitoring infrastructure, the service network, the supply chain for components, the cash logistics, all of it has to work together to maintain that near zero error rate. Take any piece out and the whole thing degrades.
There's another piece I want to touch on, the retraction mechanism. When you withdraw cash and don't take it within the timeout window, the machine pulls the notes back in.
Typically, 20 to 30 seconds. The presenter mechanism holds the notes at the dispenser slot, and if the optical sensor at the slot doesn't detect the notes being removed within the timeout, a set of rollers reverses and pulls the stack back into a dedicated reject bin inside the safe. That money is not credited back to your account automatically. It goes into a suspense account and gets reconciled later. But the key point is that the machine defaults to safe. It doesn't just leave the cash hanging there.
Which is the same philosophy as rejecting unreadable deposit notes. When in doubt, protect the money.
Graceful degradation is the engineering term. The system is designed so that every failure mode results in the money being secured, not lost. If the power fails mid-dispense, The notes that were in the transport path get diverted to a purge bin. They don't just sit in the mechanism where they could be retrieved by the next user or jam the machine on restart. If the network connection drops during a deposit transaction, the machine completes the mechanical operation and stores the transaction data locally until connectivity is restored. Every possible failure has been mapped and has a safe outcome.
The Diebold Nixdorf DN series machines, which are the latest generation, they've taken this even further with self-calibrating sensors. The machine can detect that a sensor is drifting and adjust its calibration automatically without a technician visit. That's a big deal because it reduces the window between when a problem starts developing and when it gets fixed.
It changes the service model. Instead of scheduled preventative maintenance, replacing parts on a calendar basis whether they need it or not, you move to condition-based maintenance. The machine tells you when it needs service, and you dispatch a technician only when the data says it's necessary. That saves money and reduces downtime. It's the same shift we're seeing in everything from jet engines to wind turbines.
Let me pull on one thing you mentioned earlier, the sensor fusion approach. You said it's a textbook case, and I think that's worth unpacking for the engineers listening. Why is having three different sensor types better than having one really good sensor?
Because no single sensor measures everything you need to know, and every sensor has failure pattern. An optical sensor can be fooled by a good color copy. A magnetic sensor can be fooled if the counterfeiter used magnetic ink, which does happen. An ultrasonic sensor can be fooled if the note has a watermark that changes the thickness in a way that mimics tape. But the combination of all three makes the system robust because the failure pattern are orthogonal. They don't overlap. A counterfeit that fools the optical sensor won't fool the magnetic sensor, and vice versa. It's the same principle as multi-factor authentication, but for physical objects.
The machine is doing the sensor fusion in real time, on every note, and making an accept or reject decision in something like 50 milliseconds.
The signal processing alone is impressive. The ultrasonic sensor is generating a waveform, the optical sensor is capturing an image across multiple wavelengths, the magnetic sensor is reading a time-varying signal as the note moves past the head. All of these data streams have to be aligned in time, processed, and compared against templates. And the templates themselves have to account for legitimate variation. A worn note looks different from a crisp note. A note that's been through a washing machine has different optical properties. The system has to be discriminating enough to catch counterfeits, but tolerant enough to accept legitimate notes in poor condition.
Which brings us back to Daniel's point about failure rates having to be extremely low for obvious reasons. The obvious reason is money. Every error costs someone real dollars. If the machine dispenses an extra 20, the bank loses $20. If it misreads a 50 as a 20 during deposit, the customer loses $30 and the bank loses trust. In most consumer technology, a 1 in 1,000 error rate is considered excellent. In ATMs, that would be catastrophic. It would mean an error on roughly every other machine every single day.
The math on that is stark. A busy ATM in a city center might do 300 transactions a day. At one error per 1,000 transactions, that's an error every 3 to 4 days per machine. Multiply that across a fleet of even 10,000 ATMs, and you're looking at thousands of errors daily. The 1 per 100,000 target brings that down to roughly one error per machine per year. That's the difference between a system that works and a system that destroys trust in banking.
There's one more thing I want to hit before we wrap. The human element in the quality control loop. We've talked about sensors and monitoring systems and technicians with calibration cards. But there's also the fact that every ATM has a physical audit trail. The cassettes are sealed, the reject bin is sealed, and when cash in transit crews service the machine, they reconcile the physical cash against the electronic logs. Any discrepancy gets investigated.
The dual custody principle. Two people have to be present for any cash handling, and every movement of cash is logged both physically and electronically. The ATM's internal logs say it dispensed $4,200 in 20s since the last service. The cassette should be lighter by exactly 210 notes. If it's not, the reconciliation process flags it, and someone is going to have a very detailed conversation about where those missing notes went.
Which is another sensor. In a sense, the reconciliation process is measuring the machine's accuracy after the fact, providing a ground truth check on all the real-time validation we've been talking about.
It closes the loop. The real-time sensors catch errors as they happen. The monitoring system catches trends before they become errors, and the reconciliation process catches anything that slipped through both of those nets. Three layers of verification, each with a different timescale and a different failure detection profile.
What's the takeaway here? For the engineers, I think it's that reliability at this level isn't a component problem. It's a system architecture problem. You don't get to one error per 100,000 transactions by buying better sensors. You get there by designing a system where multiple independent measurements converge on the same answer, where every failure pattern defaults to safe, and where the machine monitors its own health and calls for help before the user notices anything wrong.
For users, I think the takeaway is that when the ATM rejects your crumpled 20, it's not broken. It's working exactly as designed. The machine is choosing to protect you and the bank from a transaction it can't verify with high confidence. That's not a bug. That's the risk model doing its job.
The ATM is one of those rare technologies where the user experience of occasional mild frustration is actually evidence that the system is functioning correctly.
The most reliable systems are the ones where the failures are invisible to the user, and when they do become visible, they look like the machine being fussy rather than the machine being broken. That's a design achievement that doesn't get enough credit.
Where does the ATM go from here? Cash usage is declining in a lot of markets. Are these machines going to disappear, or are they going to evolve into something else?
The trend in the industry is toward the ATM as a multifunction kiosk. The newer machines can handle bill payments, check deposits with image capture, even biometric authentication. Some markets are using fingerprint or iris scanning instead of PINs. There's talk of ATMs serving as digital currency exchange points, where you can convert between cash and central bank digital currencies if and when those become widespread. The physical infrastructure of cash handling is expensive to maintain, but it's also already deployed and trusted. The question is whether the ATM becomes the neighborhood banking hub, or whether it gradually shrinks to serve only the remaining cash-dependent population.
Either way, the engineering lessons from the ATM, sensor fusion, graceful degradation, continuous self-monitoring, condition-based maintenance, those are going to apply to whatever replaces it. The specific machine might change, but the principles that make it reliable won't.
The ATM is a case study in building trust through engineering. Every day, millions of people hand over their money to a machine, and the machine almost never makes a mistake. That trust isn't magic. It's the accumulated result of 50-plus years of refinement in sensors, materials, software, and service logistics. The fact that we don't think about it is the highest compliment those engineers could receive.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In the 1860s, British naturalist Alfred Russel Wallace reported that ants in the Faroe Islands used pheromone trails to navigate between nests and food sources, a claim considered groundbreaking at the time. It was later discovered that Wallace had never visited the Faroe Islands and had confused a Danish farmer's description of sheep paths with ant behavior. The error was corrected in 1872 by myrmecologist Sir John Lubbock, who confirmed that ants do use pheromones, just not the Faroese ones Wallace invented.
Made up some ants.
Invented a whole ant civilization in the North Atlantic and got it published.
Forward-looking thought. The ATM's real legacy might not be the machine itself, but the reliability engineering principles it pioneered. Principles that are now embedded in everything from self-driving cars to surgical robots. The question isn't whether the ATM survives. The question is whether the systems that replace it are built with the same relentless commitment to getting it right. Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop, this has been My Weird Prompts. Find us at myweirdprompts.com. We'll be back next week.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head,
send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird props, that's the close from sloth, from man, from long ear host. My weird props, until next time, stay curious, keep weird in mind.